Saha hi Panchalapatihi, the king of Panchala, Putran, sons, Pitrivamsha, paternal family, Vivardhanan, increasing, Dadahe, with wives, Samyojiham Asa, married. Duhitrihi. I see they haven't. They had separate there. Anyway. Interesting. Different up there on the screen. Daughters. Sadrishahai. Qualified. Vadahai. With husbands. Translation. After this, King Puranjana, king of the Panchala country, in order to increase the descendants of his paternal family, married his sons with qualified wives and married his daughters with qualified husbands. So you can repeat, after this, King Puranjana,
after this, King Puranjana,
king of the Panchala country,
king of Panchala country,
in order to increase,
in order to increase
the descendants of his paternal family,
married his sons with qualified wives.
And married his daughters with qualified husbands. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. According to the Vedic system, everyone should marry. One has to accept a wife because a wife will produce children and the children in their turn will offer foodstuffs and funeral ceremonies so that the forefathers, wherever they may live, will be made happy. The offering of oblations in the name of Lord Vishnu is called pindodaka, and it is necessary that the descendants of a family offer pinda to the forefathers. Not only was Puranjana, the king of Panchala, satisfied in his own sex life, but he arranged for the sex life of his 1,100 sons and 110 daughters. In this way, one can elevate an aristocratic family to the platform of a dynasty. It is significant in this verse that Puranjana got both sons and daughters married. It is the duty of a father and mother to arrange for the marriage of their sons and daughters. That is the obligation in Vedic society. Sons and daughters should not be allowed freedom to intermingle with the opposite sex unless they are married. This Vedic social organization is very good in that it stops the promulgation of illicit sex life or varna sankara, which appears under different names in this present age, day. Unfortunately, in this age, although the father and mother are anxious to get their children married, the children refuse to get married by the arrangement of the parents. Consequently, the number of varna sankara has increased throughout the world under different names. So panchala pati putram pitri vamsha vivardhanan dharai samyoshe hamasa to hit three sadrashai varahai. So, Om Ganat, Timidanda Shah, Gadanjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Miditam Yena Tasmai, Shi Gurveda Maha. So, what we have presented here is from the father or the parent's perspective, the reason for getting the children married. There's many different reasons mentioned here. One reason is, the first reason here is the pinda stuff. That is performing the shraddha ceremony. And that keeps the parents in Pitri Loka. Pitri Loka is like a vacation spot in the higher planets. And by the children performing pinda, they keep paying the bills, so to speak. The karmic bills of the parents can remain there. And so, therefore, it's very important for people to have children. Yeah. There's one interesting story in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one devotee who just didn't have children. And so the deity actually did the pinda for him. He became his son. So it's just, even to this day, on the commemoration day of this person's departure, they'll have this ceremony in the temple. And forget that the Vaishnava's name. They'll have the ceremony in the temple, and the deity will perform pinda, or the Shraddha ceremony for the father. So, of course, for a Vaishnava, we don't have to worry about this pinda or the Shraddha ceremony, although sometimes we'll find Vaishnavas do that. Like Advaitacharya, he did this Shraddha ceremony for his forefathers. Now, it's not that he had to do that, but a Vaishnava doesn't disturb a social convention. This is a very important point, because if a Vaishnava disturbs social convention, people won't take Vaishnavism very seriously. So we have to observe. Even in America, we have certain social conventions, like shaking hands with people. It's not that we go, just like the other day, 2 days ago, I saw some member of the government. I didn't go Hare Krishna to the person. You know, I shook. Even as a lady, I shook her hands. How do you do? No, normally that would be prohibited for a sannyasi to shake ladies' hands. I don't go around doing that in the temple, shaking all the Brahmacharini's hands. You know, how do you do? Like this. We go, Hare Krishna, like this. But we follow the social convention, so people can relate to us. It's very important. A devotee should act in such a way that people can see or will see him or her as a normal person. Because if we act too weird, then basically no one will take us seriously. So Advaitacharya did the Shraddha ceremony, even though a Vaishnava doesn't have to do the Shraddha ceremony. And it's described that he offered the Shraddha plate. Shraddha plate is supposed to be offered to the best of the brahmanas, and so he offered it to Haridas Thakur, which created somewhat of a social uproar, because Haridas Thakur, according to the social convention, was not considered a Hindu. He was considered an outcast because he was born in a Muslim family. But still he did that to set an example of how a Vaishnava is considered the best of the brahmanas. So even Advaitacharya did that pinda ceremony. So we don't have to do that because we're in America. Although, you know, if we were in some place in India, maybe we would do that just so people could relate to us. So that's one of the reasons why it's important to get your children married. Another reason mentioned here is to protect them from illicit life. Because it's described, the balavan indriya grama vidvan evihikarshate. The senses are so strong that even a learned man becomes bewildered when he's put in contact with the sense objects. I mean, we see in America, for example, people can't control their eating, they can't control their smoking habits, they have to go to psychotherapists or hypnotherapists just to stop smoking or to stop eating. Could you imagine that? I mean, they're paying so much money, isn't it? Just because they can't keep a burning cinder out of their mouths. Can you imagine that? I mean, it's really weird if you think about it. That here's a burning thing that's actually giving you so many diseases, cancer, you know, lung disease and everything like emphysema. And even they're putting on the package. Nowadays, they're starting to put on the package pictures of people's cancer or physical problems they have due to smoking cigarettes. I don't know if you've seen this yet. They're starting to put that in the package. And, for years it said, warnings, cigarette smoking may kill you or may be injurious to your health, or even secondhand smoking may give you cancer or give your kids cancer. But still people can't even keep that from putting in their mouths. I mean, imagine that, lack of self-control. What to speak of the sex desire, which is much more intense and strong, especially when one's young. You know, it just like makes the world go round, the source of economic development. So you really got to protect people from succumbing in an improper way to that sex desire before it's too late. Therefore, in the Vedic system, you'd have even these early the arranged marriages when they were very young. Not that they would live with each other when they were, you know, 5 or 6 years old. That would be ridiculous. Recently in National Geographic, there was an article decrying, and that is criticizing, child marriages. And they were right, because in these particular cases that were mentioned here, the girl and the boy, or girl and the man, they were getting together, at least one of them, when they were 8 years old or 9 years old or something like that, and the poor girl was subjected to the lusty urges of a 20-year-old or a 30-year-old man when she was 8 years old. I mean, obviously, that's disgusting, horrible, child abuse, horrible. But to have something arranged before they get to the proper age, and then maybe at 18 they can get married, that's fine, because people's minds are fixed. And by being fixed on one person, it sort of helps control the mind. It keeps the mind focused rather than unfocused, and one is not looking for different paramours. Paramour means basically other amours. Amour, I guess that's French. Amour means love. So paramour means other love. So it protects the child. So that's another reason for arranging for the parents to arrange marriages for the kids. Another reason is that the kids won't have the common sense to pick the proper person for them to get married to, because when they fall in love, these love marriages, it's very common. In India, you call them love marriages or arranged marriages versus arranged marriages. Usually, they won't consider compatibility factors. Usually, they won't consider practical factors. It'll just be the urges of the gonads and the hypothalamus to be a little scatological, a little physical there. So people won't really consider those things, and they'll arrange horrible situation, and ultimately that may lead to divorce, separation, violence in the family, or at least unhappiness for the rest of someone's life. So this is absolute disaster. So the parents would arrange marriages based upon astrology and, of course, common sense, too. Not just astrology, common sense. So that's another reason for arranging marriages. Another reason, thinking of all the reasons the parents would arrange marriages, is to keep the kid from running away and not serving the parents. And that sounds interesting, doesn't it? Well, there's some instances of that. One interesting story. Of course, one story is the story of Lord Buddha. Before Lord Buddha was born, it was predicted that he would either, and I mentioned this the other day, that he would actually either be a great king or someone who would liberate everybody. And so his father, he wanted the first, not the second. So in order to keep Lord Buddha at home, first of all, he restrained Lord Buddha from seeing birth, death, disease, and old age. He wouldn't allow any old people into the castle. No sick people. And certainly no funerals or anything like that. Of course, he would allow little babies, so birth was all right. So at least the material miseries were not obviously present. But still, Buddha had some... He was always very thoughtful about things. He saw things that even the father couldn't prevent. What did he see? He saw things like animals eating other animals, cruelty of nature. So his father was thinking, let me just keep him satisfied and get him a very beautiful wife so he'll forget everything. And so I believe his wife's name was Yashohara. So he arranged this very beautiful princess from a neighboring kingdom. And basically, Buddha loved her. I mean, even Lord Buddha, he was just like... He loved her because she was so attractive. When people are young, generally they're attractive. When people get old, it's a different story. They're physically not so attractive anymore. I mean, wrinkles, I love your wrinkles. You have nice bags under your eyes. When I see the bags under your eyes, I faint in ecstasy. Your gray hair is so beautiful. Or Your bald head is so nice. You know, obviously, these things are not so attractive. Features, your breath is so bad. So, or your teeth are like stars. What is it? They come out at night. What is it? They come out at night. You know, false teeth. So, so anyway, he was very much enamored with her. But what happened is that he eventually did a tour of his kingdom by accident or by Krishna's arrangement. He saw, some old people, some sick people, maybe a funeral pyre or something like that. And especially when he saw an old person, one of the questions he asked was, will my wife look like that one day? Well, first of all, he asked, will I look like that one day? And then he was thinking, will you show her I look like that one day too? And then he went back to the kingdom, and every time he looked at his wife, it was just like, will she look like that one day? You know, he's looking at it. Because it's very interesting how we're not aware of the time factor, which is Krishna, which is basically Krishna. Hello, Asmi, as Krishna says. And this time factor really tears everything apart, tears everything down, whether through erosion, old age of a body, or whatever. But time factor actually is inexorable. That means it can't be stopped. So he kept looking at his wife and seeing the time factor there, which is really interesting. Which is basically Bhagavad Gita. Nasato vijate bhavo, nabhavo vijate sataha. Ubayar api drishtavantas 20os tatvadarshavi. Which is an interesting verse in the Gita that states that the sages consider those things as temporary is unreal. Yeah, so those things that are continue to exist, they're real. So in other words, the beauty of a young girl, a young man, or even the cuteness of a baby. You're just, everybody's so, I mean, even when I see a baby, I'm attached to the cuteness of a baby. I go up and say, oh, isn't that a cute little baby? How adorable. Like, they're nice. The bad thing about children is they have to grow up, isn't it? Except when you're in the spiritual world, you remain young forever. Nava yovanam cha, as described. We're chanting that every morning. That Krishna is ever youthful. He never gets older than 16. I mean, 16 is like the ideal age. I mean, younger ages are nice, too, for little babies. But for, like, romantic affairs, I mean, 16 is, wow, that's you. That's your peak. After that, it's all downhill. Hate to tell you that, ladies. But that's true. 16 is, you actually reach your peak, you know. And I think most of the ladies here are well beyond that peak, so. Until next life. See you next life. So anyway, nasato vijate bhavo. So to see through the verses of the Bhagavad Gita that it's unreal. Because it's temporary. We're becoming attracted to the temporary features of this world. So basically that's one of the reasons why the parents get the children married, just to keep them with them, to keep them loyal to the family. Another example in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes is the example of Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami, he was, of course, a great devotee. Of course, he wasn't Raghunath Das Goswami at that time. He was simply Raghunath Das. But he was always thinking on how to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And his father arranged for him to marry. It's described a girl that was as beautiful as the wife of Indra. Like that. And Raghunath Das still kept running away. And Raghunath Das's mother said, why don't you just tie him up? And Raghunath Das's father said, we've already tied him up with the strongest ropes available. you know, attractive wife and opulence and everything like that. And you still, who can control someone who's the like the madman of Chaitanya Chandra, who Lord Chaitanya is mad in ecstasy of love of God. So anyway, so that's another reason for, you know, arranging the marriage of your kids. And that, of course, Vedically, another reason mentioned here is that you just want to enjoy the sex life of your kids. You know, somehow or other, there's some enjoyment, it's like sublimated enjoyment, seeing your kids have babies too. You know, it's like, is that because you're too old to have babies? You know, you're 40 or 50 or 60 or 80 or 120, whatever you are, then it's just like you're enjoying through someone else's sex life. You know, the products, the byproducts. So you really want to enjoy that way. You know, you enjoy very much if your son's wife is pregnant and she's going to have a baby, and then you have go there to see the baby, and you spend all your retired life just bouncing around from one son or daughter to another to see the grandchildren. That's another big reason. Anyway, so getting back to the Pinda thing, which is one the first thing that's mentioned here, I'd like to tell an interesting story from the Mahabharata that relates to that. The Pinda ceremony, like taking care of your forefathers. Of course, as I mentioned before, we are already taking care of our forefathers by chanting Hare Krishna and becoming devotees. It liberates 10 generations or 11 generations or 100 generations, according to what statement you read in the Vedic literatures. But it's the best thing you can do for your forefathers. I mean, I'll tell you a funny story. I spoke to my mother last night, and she's one of my four mothers. Not four mothers. Four mothers. That means before. The word four can sound like the number four and also means before. Does everyone understand that? So I don't have four mothers. So I spoke to her last night, and it was just such an interesting story about how if your child is a devotee, it really helps you connect with God. So she said to me, whatever I want, I just pray to God and He gives me. And she said, I'm driving my car and I want a parking space in New York. You know, in New York, it's kind of hard to find a parking space. So she says, I just pray to God, and there's a parking space right there in front of me. He said, whenever I get sick, I just pray to God. So I said to her, I said, did you ever ask God what He wants? And she said, no, that's not God's business. He said, God, you know, God is, it was a really funny conversation. I mean, there are other things she said too, like, she said another thing is, you should do something for the people of this world. And I said, my business is to tell people how to get out of this world. And she said, but when they get out of the world, what are they going to eat? So it was a funny conversation I had with her last night. So I kept telling her, you know, you should ask God what He wants. And she said, no, God gives me whatever I want, whenever. And I was thinking that's because I happen to be her son and I'm doing devotional service. So somehow or other, Krishna's reciprocating with her, at least to increase her faith that God exists by giving her a parking space whenever she prays for a parking space. I mean, if that's what works, that's what works. You know, this is what Krishna arranges. She says, immediately when I pray, it happens. And I was thinking, I wish it worked that way for me too. You know, it doesn't, you know, because, at least because I understand Krishna's not my order supplier, so Krishna doesn't act that way, nor would I want Krishna to act that way with me. I want to become the order supplier for Krishna. So anyway, so there's a practical demonstration how if the son is Krishna conscious, and I've certainly never done Pinda or Shraddha or anything for my forefathers. All I did was join the Hare Krishna movement. So a practical demonstration of how the forefathers or foremothers or whatever gets benefit. Isn't it? That's a practical example in my own life. So, going back to the traditional pindah ceremony, there's an interesting story in the Mahabharata of someone called Jatakaro. Now, Jatakaro was, anyway, so he was a really renounced sage. I mean, basically he was living on the air, he was disinterested in this whole material world. So he never did a pindah ceremony because he never got married. You know, he never got married, never had children who could do the pindah ceremony, and he never did the pindah ceremony. So one day, this guy, sage, is walking through the woods, and he sees some people hanging upside down over a hole, and then upside down, they're being held by the feet, and there's a rope around their feet, and the rope is being eaten gradually by some rats. And he asks them, you know, who are you? And they say, well, we are, they gave a name, I forget their name actually, but they said, our descendant is not performing pindah, so we're gradually, our pious activities are being eaten up and we're going to fall into the well. You know, it was sort of like a metaphorical statement. We're going to actually be finished. And he asked, you know, who is your descendant, you know, who's not getting married and doing all these things? They said, his name is Jatakaro. And Jatakaro said, uh-oh, that's me. And they said, well, we have a request for you, my dear Jatakaro. You should get married and have children. And Jatakaro said, oh, my God, this is the last thing I wanted to happen to me. You know, he was completely disturbed. He said, all right, only on the condition that I'll find a girl named Jatakaro, the same name as me. So he thought, that's a trick. I'll never find her. So he was going through the woods. Many, many years later, he said, well, this is your last chance. If there's no girl named Jatakaro, then I ain't getting married. But there happened to be a sister of Vasuki, one of the snake people, and her name was Jatakaro, so Vasuki came out and said, I have a sister, her name is Jatakaro, so you're getting married. So he said, but still he wasn't happy that he had to get married. He said, well, only on the condition that she never disagrees with me, talks back to me, or says anything disagreeable. And so they arranged the marriage, and somehow or other, she was pregnant after some time, and somehow or other after a little while, she did something that he didn't like she woke him up when it was time to do a ceremony, one of his sanja programs. I mean, sanja means at the time of dusk or the middle of the day. These are the sanjas, the tree sanjas, or the time of the dawn. And so she disturbed him, and he got angry, and he left. But at the same time, she was pregnant. She gave birth to this personality named Ashtika, who saved the snake race from extinction when Maharaj Jatamajaya was performing. So the point is that this poor guy was forced to get married against his will just to do this, so he could do the pinda or the shraddha, and his son could do the shraddha just to save the forefathers. So anyway, so this is an interesting story about that. And as I mentioned before, don't worry, you don't have to do it. Don't get married against your will. Of course, in general, like Prabhupada said, people should be married because that will protect them. We have a lot of experience when you put a man and a woman together and they're not married and they're not protected that way, that there's inevitably some difficulty or problem. There's attraction between them. It's like fire and butter. You put fire and butter together, you get ghee. Or as I said many times before, you're going to get a ghee hasta. I know, that's a play on words, like instead of a grahasta. So, anyway, so these are some of the reasons to arrange marriages. Even as a spiritual master, I'm very concerned with many of my disciple ladies and men who are not married and they're young. The older ones, it's too late. But as far as the younger ones, you're very concerned that there be some arrangement so they can get married. Just like yesterday, I was, even though I hate to take the position of Cupid, it's not my dharma. You know, yesterday I wrote a letter to two disciples, one in anyway, different countries. I don't want to mention. It's not important. Different countries and different places in the world. Please correspond with so-and-so. Please write a letter to so-and-so and see if it works out. Because I'm concerned that people be protected, that devotees be protected, and the men also. The men are protected by having a proper wife. It protects the man. The woman is sometimes called the person who controls the fortress, the man's consciousness, and helps him focus on spiritual life, helps him be steady. So therefore, Prabhupada said, well, even though ordinarily for a sannyasi, it's actually even prohibited for a sannyasi to have anything to do with marriage or perform marriage sacrifices, Prabhupada said he was doing it because understanding the higher principle of keeping people steady in Krishna consciousness year after year. Prabhupada said you should fight Maya, using the example of Gajendra the elephant, who was fighting the crocodile, and he was fighting out of his element. He was fighting in the water. The crocodile was defeating him because he was in the water. An elephant is a land animal. Prabhupada said people should be properly situated so they can fight Maya from the proper ashram. Not only ashram, but proper varna, but that's not really the subject matter of this class. Varna means they have to be engaged according to their psychophysical nature in serving Krishna. If someone's doing something, like if you put a shudra in an intellectual capacity, that's not the proper varna. So varna and ashram have to be there to protect someone from fall down or deviation from Krishna consciousness. So that's the spiritual master's duty, even if it involves sometimes, making arrangements for marriages or doing a marriage ceremony, which Prabhupada certainly did. So any questions or comments? We have about 3 minutes left for class. Questions, comments, arguments, problems? Yeah.
So how do those of us that are older stay protected outside? What's the protection for those?
Well, Prabhupada said you could have a class of ladies who take shelter of Krishna. Krishna is ultimately everyone's, husband in an ontological sense. So that's ultimately we have to understand that too. I mean, that's the understanding the women and men have to come to by the time they're, whether they're married in the beginning or not married in the beginning, by the time they get older, that, Krishna is the ultimate shelter. And when one's older, the romantic urges hopefully diminish. If they don't diminish when one's older, you've got to chant a little more Hare Krishna. Or eat a little less. Or do something, or get a parakeet. I'm just joking about that. I mean, normally they should diminish, and one should develop the ability, the strength of intelligence to control the urges of the senses. I mean, the mind may still be attracted, or the senses may have some agitation. But one should develop the intelligence by the time one's older, to be able to ascertain, to discriminate, and when to pull back the senses, like the tortoise knows when to pull back the limbs within the shell to protect itself. So, Prabhupada did not generally advise people over 50, Prabhupada even said after 30, it's hard for people to adjust to married life because, when people get married, they are still two different personalities. And to adjust to another personality, it's difficult. When you're under 30, it's a little easier. But when you're over 40 or 50 or 70 or 80, so... It's pretty hard. Unless say if a man finds someone like, what is her name? Sukanya. The Chaivana movie? You've heard Chaivana movie before? There's a story in the Vedic literature. In the Bhagavatam, it's Chaivana Muni. He's a real old sage. And he was really grumpy. And somehow or other, his marriage with this young girl, Sukanya, was arranged because she happened to have committed offenses when he was... The point is that he was in a hole meditating in the ground looking at her. And she poked his eyes a little bit with a piece of grass. And as a result, her father, sorry, he had soldiers and everything like that. They got constipation. And because of that offense, Sarayati had to give his daughter to this old sage, Chaivanamuni, and he was real grumpy, and she had to tolerate that. I mean, how many people now, and how many young ladies could tolerate a grumpy old man being married? You don't know what a grumpy old man is. I do, because I am a grumpy old man. But how isn't it? I mean, Prabhupada even said when you get older, you get grumpier. It's not like wine gets better with age. So, how many young ladies could tolerate that? Someone just like a short temper and everything like that. But she tolerated it. And as a result, her husband was transformed into a beautiful young man by the mercy of the Ashwini Kumaras. But generally, that doesn't happen. I have not experienced. I have no experience of a grumpy old man being transformed into a young man. And I don't have the Fountain of Youth, and Ponce de Leon never discovered it. He was an explorer in the United States. So generally it's not advisable. Of course, if the man has $10 billion, then, you can tolerate anything. Like we see sometimes, like a really old, grumpy old man will marry a young girl, but he has a lot of money, so that sort of makes up for it, because he's going to die soon and she's going to inherit the whole thing. So in general, marriage is meant for a certain stage of life. There's a time and a place for everything in life. Like Prabhupada said, after 50, people should be both the man and woman should be vanaprastha, and the man should be sannyasa. There should be a more renounced mode of life there. You had your opportunity, it's over. Except for the Shudras. I mean, Shudras, there's no rules and regulations except for the Baha Yajna. But for the higher classes, it's over at a certain point. Next life, you got another opportunity. So why take another birth? Okay. On that happy note.